all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense for this Tuesday, February 14th, a beautiful day on Lake Wissota, if for no other reason than it's Valentine's Day, and I get to greet my radio Valentine here, one Aaron Zommers. Good morning, Aaron. Happy Valentine's Day to you. Yeah, I know.
Good morning. Happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
Yeah,
you're wearing a red shirt. I should have done that.
I know, very red shirt. My wife had to dig out her very red sweater. It's just one of those wear red days, and happy to do that. So
hey, I forgot it was Valentine's Day. Honestly,
it's as we get older. Yeah, it's like oh, that's right. And so my wife and I have a wonderful romantic habit now in terms of Valentine's Day. We both were shopping for ourselves at a Duluth Trading Company at an outlet mall. And as we came, I came out with my bag of stuff and she came out with her bag of stuff. And I said, I looked at her bag. I said, do you like the stuff I got you for Valentine's Day? She's like, yeah, it's great. Look at the stuff you gave me. It's amazing. And that's what you can do when you're old and married and secure. You can exchange gifts that way. So is it a cop out? Sure. I'll come up with good gifts now and then, but boy, I'm not the world's best gift giver. I've had a few that, you know, just you didn't see them used anymore. And you go, okay, well that missed the mark, but you know, that happens to all of us. And so sometimes you got to let the person take care of themselves and then take all the credit for it. And that's what we've got going on today. All right, let's look at what's coming up on the program today. We've got, we're learning about the efforts in Clark County to welcome refugees who've been fleeing the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We'll talk to Bryce Luchterhand about that, an old friend of ours who worked previously for the Governor Jim Doyle administration. So while he's here, we'll talk a bit about tomorrow's state budget address that the governor will give to the legislature. And let's see, we will also have a review. I just looked at something put up by Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio, noting that the Wausau School Board did vote last night to move forward with a major consolidation plan, a controversial plan that many in the public said did not have enough input, did not have enough buy-in from the public, but the school board is moving forward anyway. We also have more Wisconsin headlines. One of those budget proposals from Governor Evers is actually good for the Milwaukee Brewers. It would extend the lease for the Brewers in return for using some of the state budget surplus to help with repairs. Seems like a rather fair trade here. Reminder, we talked to two of the state Supreme Court candidates yesterday, Milwaukee Judge Janet Protasiewicz and Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell. If you'd like to listen back to those interviews, go to civicmedia.us and you can listen to any of our shows as a podcast. You can reach the studio here at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Our question of the week involves tipping. We had a story up on the website some time back about tipping and what, if anything, have you done to change the way that you tip. As some places move to a no tipping policy, they've raised their prices and that extra money is going to the workers. They're paying the workers better. Other places, of course, still don't do that. And some people are recommending paying more than 15% as a customary tip for good service. We want to know what it is that you do. And so you can go to our Facebook page and comment under the, or you're watching the show live. If you do that over at Facebook or at the Bull Falls Radio page on Facebook. Let's see, we have not a lot in sports headlines to share as we start this Tuesday. The Badger men's basketball team hosts Michigan tonight. Number 11 Marquette, that's their new AP national ranking. Number 11 Marquette men's basketball team will host number 16 Xavier tomorrow in another showdown to see which team will be on top of the Big East Conference standings. The Bucks take a 10-game winning streak into tonight's matchup at home against the Boston Celtics. And finally, the thing that I think is most important of all to note for sports, football's over. Baseball is here. Spring training, the camps are opening this week. The Milwaukee Brewers' first workout for pitchers and catchers is the day after tomorrow. Spring training finally opening in Arizona and Florida. For the Brewers, that first spring training game is just 11 days away, Saturday, February 25th, against the LA Dodgers. And then the season will begin on Thursday, March 30th, with three games at Wrigley Field versus the Cubs. And so it's here. It's here. It's coming. You can just, can you tell I'm a little happy about this, Aaron? It's, you know, we don't,
a little bit.
We don't talk about like every sport every day, but you're going to hear Brewers scores. You're going to hear baseball news because that's where my loyalty lies. And because I don't expect that we're going to hear anything about Aaron Rodgers and his darkness retreat, at least not anything worth passing along. So we're going to go with baseball.
Yeah, certainly not worth anything passing along.
No, I mean, again, if he learned anything big there in the capsule or whatever it was, we'll be certain to pass it along breathlessly as breaking news. Coming up next, we will have some Wisconsin headlines on the day, especially looking ahead to Governor Evers' budget address and the thing that could be very good for it for the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll be back. You're up north. Our theme today, Aaron, is just going to be, you know, happy songs that you would like on Valentine's Day to make you feel something about, you know, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, you know, somebody special like that. That's as happy as we're going to get for it today. We don't have any like love tips or anything like that. Just some happy music.
And you know what? Sometimes that's all you need.
Sometimes, yes, it's like our friends the Beatles said, love is all you need. So a reminder that we will be talking to Chad Holmes coming up in just a bit here, along with Bryce Luchterhan in just a few minutes. Chad Holmes is going to be talking to us about the Wausau School Board voting last night to move forward with a school consolidation plan. One comment to share from Facebook coming in from Roger Frost that says, if the two high schools in Wausau combine, which is part of the plan, this will be the end of the Wisconsin Valley Conference. Merrill has wanted to leave the Wisconsin Valley Conference for years. That just leaves five schools in the conference. And that's actually a very good point that what we're going to talk to Chad about is that there are folks who are looking at this from a consolidation standpoint of school population. Others are looking at it from transportation. There's going to be some very long bus rides for kids. And others are looking at it from an athletics standpoint, either in a positive way or in a negative way, wondering, was this plan spurred on in part by wanting to combine the schools to have, you know, one larger, better super school, whatever the case may be. So again, that and many subjects to talk to Chad Holmes about around 7:30 or so. The state budget address is going to be given by Governor Tony Evers tomorrow night before the legislature. And here's the important thing to know. In the state legislature, there really is only one bill that needs to pass, and that's the state budget bill. Everything else is ancillary. It's extra, but the budget has to be passed in order to fund government. And it's in that budget bill. It becomes basically a catch-all for all manner of programs that you're either adding or, you know, cutting or modifying, as the case may be. So that's why you hear so much coverage about the budget bill. It is the blueprint for state services over the next couple of years. So you'll hear many elements of it. I mean, that state budget bill, as it sat on my desk in the legislature, well, it never totally just sits there because it's constantly, you know, churning with things that are being debated. And the process works like this. no matter who's in charge of the governor's office or the legislature, the governor proposes a budget through this budget address. So the governor begins the process. The legislature then takes a look at that and says, well, we'll put this in, we're going to take this out, we're going to change this. It goes to their finance committee. Now, there's not a state assembly finance committee. There's not a state Senate finance committee. They said, you know, for the sake of efficiency, let's have just one finance committee that reviews the budget. That's why it's called the Joint Finance Committee. But as a result, that is a very powerful committee. That is the group of people that write the state budget, you know, basically, that the final version will then go to the Assembly and the Senate to vote on. Yes, there will be amendments there as well. And then the final product goes to the governor to either sign or veto. The one wrinkle that we've had since Tony Evers was elected governor is that the Republicans who have run the legislature since they gerrymandered the maps, you know, back in 2011, have said to Tony Evers, you can propose whatever you want. The very first thing we're going to do is throw that in the garbage can. And then we're going to start over and we're going to write our own budget. Because again, it seems a common theme since Republicans took control was to do things as least efficiently as possible in order to do things their way, no matter how much taxpayer money it uses, no matter how much time it wastes. So the governor will give this address tomorrow. And then as Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has already said, following the State of the State address, we'll probably throw it all out and start all over again. And so that's what will be happening there. But the governor still gets to propose these things, and we get to talk to you, the public, about it so that you understand that there were ideas that were put out there, ideas that could, should be considered, and may or may not be brought up. And again, they're not just money spending things. There are policy proposals, because they spend money, that go in there as well. I'll talk about the ones related to elections and voting and land conservation coming up in a second, but I wanted to share this sports one first. This is about renovations at American Family Field, the home of the Milwaukee Brewers. And Governor Evers wants to, of that record $7 billion surplus, wants to provide nearly $300 million from it to help with repairs and renovations at American Family Field. This is not unheard of. Public money, either from state or local sources, has been used to construct Fiserv Forum for the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee, for Lambeau Field in Green Bay, for the Green Bay Packers, for other smaller venues around Wisconsin. And so it's hardly unheard of. And here's the thing. In exchange for the money, the Brewers have agreed to extend their lease at the stadium by 13 years. So if the legislature were to take this proposal from Governor Tony Evers and put it in the final budget bill, the Brewers would be sure to stay in Milwaukee through 2043. That is not a small thing. That to me, the reason I'm leading off with that is it's a relatively new thing that's come out, and I think is worthy of telling people around the state on this wonderful Civic Media Radio Network, that the governor is proposing something that is a use of surplus dollars, and as a result, is going to keep a baseball team here that their future has not always been intact in Wisconsin. Over the years, there has been talk about, you know, moving the team, changing ownership. It's eventually what led to taking down very old County Stadium and providing what was Miller Park before it became American Family Field. And now, after all these years, it requires some renovations and repairs. And in doing so, that's going to keep a major league sports franchise here through 2043, which leads to the question that I'm sorry to be so direct, but it just happens so often. How can Republicans in the legislature screw this up? And, you know, as we'll see, as we've talked about with land conservation, the answer is they can do it, because sometimes they just do things because they want to, because they want to make a point about being in power. In fact, let's get to that conservation one. The governor wants to make it harder for the legislature to stop conservationists and the state from buying land. and conserving it and keeping it from turning into the next strip mall or golf course or whatever it is that's going to pollute the local groundwater. The governor wants to increase the threshold for stopping stewardship projects. Evers has said that his budget proposal will repeal a requirement that all projects north of Highway 64 be subject to legislative review. And he will also double the threshold of legislative review for grants and acquisitions under the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. And he would require any member of the legislature who objects to a purchase to be named publicly. And this is the wonderfully, dare I say, corrupt thing that we have in the Republican-led legislature right now, is that a single state legislator can kill a project anonymously by raising an anonymous objection. The same folks who talked about killing earmarks in budgets because they wanted greater transparency have the least transparent way possible to kill proposals that would preserve land for recreation, hunting, fishing, hiking, and then perhaps for well-planned development rather than just whatever the latest big proposal is from somebody who builds something and then leaves after a year or two. The proposal comes after Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee last month killed a plan by the DNR to spend more than $15 million on an easement that would have preserved 56,000 acres of northern Wisconsin forest land. About 11 million of that would have come from federal dollars. The remaining 4 million or so would have come from the state stewardship fund. Evers said that the review process for these projects has been weaponized by certain members of the legislature, and it leaves some critical projects in limbo. Now, Republicans include Senator Mary Felskowski from Irma, who sits on the Joint Finance Committee and admitted that she was one of those who anonymously objected to the purchase of forest land. She and other Republicans have been trying for years to scale back stewardship purchases. They claim it takes land off the tax rolls and robs municipalities of revenue. But what they're assuming in each case that every piece of land purchased under the stewardship program is, you know, going to come off the tax rolls, or when many of them weren't, they were already off the tax rolls. They were already, you know, federal forest land, or in some other way, they were not contributing to the tax roll. So it's really, it's an excuse to say, look, we want to kill this because we think if a developer comes in and wants to turn this forest land into a golf course that, you know, they should be allowed to do it, no questions asked, or, you know, put in the next mega farm that comes in and, you know, dumps water or dumps pollutants into the groundwater. It's time to have a more orderly process for conserving land in Wisconsin and not just allowing a single legislator to anonymously spike a project like that. One more element of the budget to talk to you about, and that's for elections, for voters, for democracy. Under a Governor Evers proposal, Wisconsin drivers would be automatically registered to vote. The governor's office says that it would earmark about $500,000 for the Wisconsin Elections Commission and the Department of Transportation to register eligible citizens whose information is on file with the Department of Transportation. Is this new? It would be to Wisconsin, not here. At least 20 states across the country already automatically register voters, as it should be. That you make voting as easy as possible. Democracy should be participatory for all citizens, for all eligible voters. Make it easier on folks to vote, and they will. But we have one political class here that is actively working to make it harder for eligible citizens to vote because they can't win on their ideas alone or with their candidates. The Evers budget proposal would also loosen voter residency requirements, which Republicans, again, ratcheted up a couple of years back. It would allow clerks to start processing absentee ballots the day before an election, and it would allocate funds to pay for electronic poll books. So the amount of time that a Wisconsin resident must live in a municipality in order to vote would be reduced from 28 days down to 10 days so that folks who have just moved into a community can have a say on who's on their school board, who's their legislator and whatnot, and not be penalized for being a new resident. Why make them vote in their old hometown when they're not going to be there anymore? Well, Bryce Luchterhand was the Northern Wisconsin representative for Governor Jim Doyle, and he's going to join us in just a bit to talk a little bit about state budget matters, but also about the efforts by he and his wife, Max, to help Ukrainian refugees who are fleeing the Russian invasion in Europe and to make a new home in Wisconsin. That's all coming up right after this on a Tuesday, Valentine's Day. You're up north. We're just doing all the good ones today, all the classic love songs on this Valentine's Day. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and joined now by a friend of mine from way, way back. And by way, way back, I now mean just like 15 years, because politics ages you sometimes. And I haven't seen Bryce Luchterhand in forever, but he's here, and I couldn't be happier about it. Bryce, nice to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for asking me to be on.
Oh, it's definitely our pleasure. When Bryce and I were working together, when I was in the legislature, he was the Northern representative for Governor Jim Doyle at the time. But he's done so much more than that. He and his wife Max have been operating their family farm in Clark County since 1973. He has worked as an elementary guidance counselor, high school social studies teacher, dairy farmer. He's worked for President Clinton. He's worked for Senator Herb Kohl and Tammy Baldwin, has served on town board, school board. You're currently on the Clark County board. Is this just do you just not like working on the farm? Is that why you keep doing all this?
Yeah, I always tell people I've had a lot of jobs, but I've never been able to hold one for very
long. Well, apparently you do just fine. So that's all right. Let's see. We've got a program called Welcome Connect that allows potential sponsors and Ukrainians to meet online. And that's what I wanted to get to first before we do some state politics. And so can you tell us a bit about, well, first off, your own interest in it? What led to your willingness to help Ukrainians who were trying to flee a terrible Russian invasion of their country?
Well, of course, the anniversary of the Ukrainian war is coming up. February 24th. When that occurred last year, it began to displace a little over 6 million Ukrainian families from their homes, and that is an ongoing event right now. We started to think, how can we help any of these families from where we were? It happens that we have two homes on our farm. One is a house that my mother lived in. She passed away a year ago in October. So that house has been sitting empty. We've maintained it. It's fully furnished. And we thought, well, we've got all these people. Maybe we could provide a home for someone. When it started, the Ukrainian family had to have a relative here in the United States. Well, of course, that filled up pretty fast. So then they started a program called United for Ukraine. That's the United States Immigration Service. And Welcome Connect is a tool to connect Ukrainian families with potential sponsors. And to sponsor a family from Ukraine, you had to tell the Immigration Service that if the people came over here, you would make sure that they had housing, they had food, clothes on their back, and whatever is considered a living expense here. And we were able to do that financially, and we went ahead and put out a profile on Welcome Connect. They could see that. So any Ukrainian family that was connected with Welcome Connect could see our profile, and we could see some of theirs. There was a little bit of give and take. We found a family that we said, we would like to sponsor you. They said, we'd like you to sponsor us. I sent them a second note and said, understand that you're going to be in a very rural area and you'll be living right next door. Yep, they agreed to that. And when that happened, then Welcome Connect goes away and you're able to connect with them directly. So that's where we are. The family arrived here on January 31st. It's a family of a husband, wife, and two wonderful little boys, age 6 and 3. And the 6-year-old is starting school in the Colby School District this week. So, and the we're waiting for work permits from the Immigration Service, but both the mother and father are going to be looking for work.
That is that's wonderful. And so when you began this, I know you kind of thought you were going it alone, and that led to a GoFundMe page, and then certainly just word of mouth. And so what has the response been like? Because and I set that up not to denigrate anybody, just to note that we are living in an age where people who are seem to be anti all immigrants, you know, have no problem, you know, sharing that point of view. Did you get that sense in Clark County and from others when they heard you were looking to take care of a Ukrainian family?
You know, when people first heard about it, there was some talk about why are you doing that? But once people have heard that we've actually gone ahead and sponsored this family, the positive response has been really overwhelming. We hear from people virtually every day that are looking, asking how they can help. Does the family need clothing? What is it that they need? And pretty basically, the house they moved into was fully furnished. We've had adequate voluntary clothing supplies. And so we've asked people to simply donate money if they could. Then we give the family an allowance according to Welcome Connect's instructions. And I think we're the focus of very positive reaction throughout the community.
That's sure. Amazing. It's amazing, and it's what I'd been hoping to hear. But again, you're never sure in any given situation. So, by and large, then for folks that hear this, if they wanted to help in your specific situation in Clark County, it would be probably going to the GoFundMe page, I would imagine. And then, you know, are there other ways people living in other parts of the state, if they say they'd kind of like to maybe follow in your footsteps, can you guide them as to what their next step should be?
You bet. In the first place, anybody that's interested in doing that and would like some direct advice are certainly welcome to call Max and I, and we'd be glad to talk to them on the telephone. Otherwise, go to the Welcome Connect website, and they will guide you through the process. It's a very simple process. We thought that it was going to take us several months for this to go through. And in fact, I believe we started on December 10th, and 10 days later, we were talking to the family. We had gotten a sponsor. The Immigration Service had provided their travel status, and we were on the way. All we had to do then was figure out when and how they were going to get here. So Welcome Connect is a very easy process, and I would encourage people to go on and take a look at it. You do have to make a financial commitment. Depending on the family that arrives, it is going to impact that need.
Okay. So let's then shift gears a little bit because of yours and my past life, which again, like any bad habit, is tough to give up, and that is, you know, following politics, and you know, we know that state government has been divided for a long time, but we know that it still takes, you know, leadership. It takes people who are paying attention to their local districts rather than partisan politics. And yet here we sit with a legislature that still has virtually no interest in working with Governor Tony Evers. Has that had, what has the impact been like in Clark County on farming, on getting issues, things to market, on fixing the infrastructure? What has this divisive political climate meant to rural Wisconsin, in your view, as Governor Jim Doyle's former northern director?
Well, I was astounded when I became the director of Governor Doyle's northern office to travel around the state and see the school districts that require massive amounts of state aid. And in rural school districts, much of that state aid goes to the simple act of getting the kids from home to school and back again. That is a cost that is not needed in more urban school districts. Although, let's say an urban school district would get X number of dollars in state aid, and a rural district would also. The rural district is actually receiving less money for the actual education of those kids because of the tremendous amounts of money needed to transport them. Then, of course, for some reason, the Republican Party has opposed increasing state aid forever. They fought Governor Doyle, and they're fighting Tony Earl on it also.
Evers.
Now, the Republicans will say, oh, we're for increasing state aid to schools. But the caveat is that when they talk about schools, they're talking about private vouchers. And whenever a school district has a student that accepts a private voucher, they are then docked that amount of state aid. So private vouchers mean that money is going to private schools and less money going to public schools. And that is that injures everybody.
And it certainly would seem to be the kind of thing that you could address with a record $7 billion surplus, something we never enjoyed during the Doyle years in the legislature and in the administration. It seems, as I've said frequently, this seems like the ultimate way for Republicans and Democrats to find a win-win. And yet, sadly, I'm not seeing a lot of confidence that a win-win is eventually going to be carved out right now with things like aid to school districts and to local units of government.
Right. Governor Evers has increased or has proposed increasing state aid to schools, state aid to municipalities, and he is being met with no. In fact, I believe it was Robin Voss said just the other day that probably Tony Earl's entire budget proposal, which incidentally he hasn't really come out and given it all in black and white, he's trickling it out. I think tomorrow is the day that he's going mm-hmm. to make his speech. But he's already been met with, well, we're going to just shelve that and we'll propose our own budget. And much of that budget, I believe, is going to focus around a flat tax. That is being proposed by the head of the Senate Republicans. And has been endorsed by Robin Voss in the assembly also. Now, a flat tax would mean about a $3.5 billion tax cut for the top 20% in the state of Wisconsin. Where Tony Evers' proposal is aimed at providing about a $200 average tax cut for taxpayers earning less than $100,000, $150,000, married couple. And much of those tax cuts are geared to the very lowest. It means increasing the earned income credit tax cut, the child care. In fact, he wants to provide a new tax credit of $500 for child care. Those are things that, for some reason, the Republicans think is just a waste of money,
we're actually helping middle class families. I know it's just a complete shakeup in priorities. Well, Bryce, folks are lucky around that area that they can still pick your brain on what's happening in the state capitol. And you've also turned out to be a tremendous resource for families that are in need in a time of war. Thanks so much for the visit. Let's do it again real soon.
I'm all for it. Thanks, Pat.
All right, Bryce. Thanks so much. This day in history, a little music break all coming up. This is Up North News Radio.
Just a gigolo, everywhere I go, the people know the part that I'm playing. I am paid for every dance, I sell each romance, every night some heart I'm betraying.
This, boys and girls, was the number one song, the new number one song on this day, Valentine's Day, 1931. That's Ted Lewis singing Just a Gigolo. Now, there is a pretty good chance you're more familiar with the versions from David Lee Roth and or Louis Prima. Both of them combined it with a second song, I Ain't Got Nobody. But this is the original U.S. version of an old Austrian tune. Aaron, did I educate you on something today?
Just a Gigolo. Yeah, you did.
You know, we always think, did they really do that kind of stuff? Like, I'm just a gigolo, and everywhere I go, it's like, yeah, they really did. Apparently, that's how you made a number one hit record back in that day. Shall we move up just a little bit? On this day in 1967, Aretha Franklin spent Valentine's Day in a studio in New York City and did a remake of an Otis Redding tune. You've probably heard of it. So there you go. You can bookmark that and dance to it yourself a little later on after the show if you like. Maybe download it. But I did mention it's a remake of an Otis Redding tune. And unless you listen to a lot of old guy radio like me, you probably either haven't heard it for a long time or haven't heard it at all. So we just want to give you a little of Otis Redding. Otis, hit it. Yeah. Oh, I'm there you go. Just, again, you can download as much as you want nowadays, so go grab that one too and compare and keep them both on there. They both are right for just the right mood. All right, we're going completely opposite musical spectrum now on this day in 1987. In perhaps the most 1980s thing that we could see on this day, a Los Angeles radio station, KTWV, switches from rock to smooth jazz. I suppose their theme was love songs on this Valentine's Day, but it was a relatively brand new format back then. Smooth jazz, folks like Kenny G, who made a lot of money off of our willingness to be lulled to sleep through the Yaz flute and other things. Singer Rob Thomas is 51 years old today. On this day in 1849, President James Polk became the first sitting president to get his photo taken. He really could have used one of those Snapchat filters. Trust me, look at the picture. On this day in 1899, voting machines were approved for use by Congress in U.S. elections. The following day in 1899, Carrie Lake's great-great-grandmother claims fraud and predicts that she will be governor of Arizona before 1899 is done, which is odd because Arizona didn't become a state until this very day in 1912, when it became the 48th state.
Like great-great-grandmother, like great-great-granddaughter.
Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, is all made up. But, you know, never miss a chance to poke fun at Carrie Lake still claiming that she won the election. Shall we escape smooth jazz? But interestingly, also on this day in 1987, as that one station in LA gave up rock and roll, this was the number one rock hit that day. mean, I just don't know how you make that trade. I really don't. You have this from Bon Jovi, which would stay in the number one spot for 4 weeks.
Well, maybe they just wanted some variety. You have some stations to listen to wake you up and some to fall asleep, like you said.
Without a doubt. Also, this day in 2005, YouTube was formally created as a company by three young men who were working for PayPal at the time. Being young men, this probably won't surprise you, but the early inspiration for them to develop YouTube was to facilitate dating. And they also wanted a way to store video because they were looking to find video clips, can't believe I'm saying this, of Janet Jackson's infamous wardrobe malfunction a few days earlier at the Super Bowl. That was part of their inspiration for a video sharing and storing site, and they created YouTube Valentine's Day of 2005.
I'd like to say the platform has come a long way, but I'm not so sure about that.
It really has not, no. Let's see, this day in 1992, Wayne's World was released, bringing Bohemian Rhapsody back into everyone's minds. We'll play that some other time. Instead, to mark Valentine's Day 1992, a reminder that in this movie, rock legend Alice Cooper taught us all a little bit about the indigenous people, especially around Milwaukee, since Wayne and Garth were visiting Mr. Cooper after a concert in Milwaukee in the movie.
So, do you come to Milwaukee often?
Well, I'm a regular visitor here, but Milwaukee has certainly had its share of visitors. The French missionaries and explorers were coming here as early as the late 1600s to trade with the Native Americans.
In fact, isn't Milwaukee an Indian name?
Yes, Pete, it is. Actually, it's pronounced Miliwake, which is Algonquin for the good land.
I was not aware of that.
I think one of the most interesting aspects of Milwaukee
And on they go. So, how much of it is true? It's Hollywood, boys and girls. On this day in 2004, Outkast took the number one spot on the singles chart from themselves. Hey Ya had been number one for 9 weeks, but then The Way You Move had been number two for 8 weeks and moved into the number one spot this day in 2004. And finally, on this day in 1779, the renowned explorer James Cook is killed on the Big Island of Hawaii in a dispute over a stolen boat. What I'm going to say next isn't related to that in any way other than that it reminds me of my favorite 1980s comic strip, Bloom County, and my favorite strip of all. And only the most ardent Bloom County fans will get the reference when I say, man, those Samoans are a surly bunch. And if you do get that joke, please send me a note. It is very clear that we need to be friends. Again, as often happens in this segment, I make some kind of a reference and Aaron reminds me of my advancing age. Aaron, Bloom County, anything there?
Nope.
Bill the Cat, Opus, Milo Bloom, none of that, huh?
Nope.
Just crickets. Okay. I will say for those folks, and there are enough of you who remember Bloom County, Milo Bloom, the kid with the glasses, he was an inspiration for me, especially in his role as editor of the Bloom Beacon. And I could only hope that my journalistic career in some way, shape, or form follows that of Milo Bloom rather than Binkley or Cutter John or Bobby Joe or Steve Dallas, all the other characters. Love it. And I love that the author is still putting occasional comic strips on Facebook. So look for his original work there. Have much more coming up in the next hour of Up North News Radio on this Valentine's Day, Tuesday. We'll be back.